Welcome to episode 84 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. For the last month or so, I've been saying that I'll do an episode on the equipment other than the main stuff like bodies and lenses that I'd really not like to be without. I thought I'd better get that episode out, so I spent a few hours this weekend photographing all but a couple of the things that I'm going to talk about and uploaded those photographs to my website. Today we'll go through and talk about 12 things in total that I use quite a lot, if not all the time, in my photography. I'll try and interweave a few tips as we go along, but the main tip for each of these items really is the item itself, you know, just the thing that I'm using. And you know, most of them you've probably heard of. If there are some that you haven't and you find them interesting, you might want to give them a try. Basically, this is just sort of the things that I really find useful at the moment and have done for a while for some of them. So I just thought I'd share these with you today. As with last week, we're going to look at 12 images today, and I'm going to talk about 11 items in total, and sneak another one in there that I kind of forgot about. So I'm going to not spend very much time looking at each image. I'm not going to go into details about the image itself, because they're just to show you the product that I'm talking about. So let's first look at image number 1407, in which we can see the first two items. On the right is the Angle Finder C from Canon. This does exactly what you'd expect. It allows you to view the image through the lens at an angle. It rotates 360 degrees, so you can look into it from literally any angle. Though it's a little bit awkward sometimes to view from the bottom of the camera, say if you have the camera upside down or something for macro photography, but then you also have the battery grip on. It can be a little bit difficult to look at, but you know, generally you can look at it from any direction. I use this most for low angle work, such as macro photography when the camera is in a low position, low to the ground. The angle finder also has a switch on the side, as you can see in the photo, that switches its magnification from 1.25 times to 2.5 times. This is really quite useful when fine-tuning the focus for macro shots, as it really sort of zooms in on the subject. Of course, the most important part of the shot is not always in the center, though, but when it is, it's really helpful. Also, the barrel of the finder rotates to focus the finder itself, which I forget every so often, and having rotated it slightly while handling it or fitting it to the camera, and then I wonder why for a moment things are a little bit blurred. But then, you know, I remember about this, the rotating of the eyepiece to focus it, and everything goes back to normal. I also use this sometimes even when standing up or sitting, but I want the camera to be lower than my eye level. This is really just a comfort thing. It just helps me to keep from straining the old back, as I might do if I'm sort of stooping down, either from a standing position or a sitting position, to look into the finder itself. So, you know, this is just another way that I use it, not just for low-level work. The other thing in this first photo is a spirit level. This basically fits onto the flash shoe on the top of the camera. And it's literally just a spirit level that helps to make sure that the camera is horizontal or vertical, depending on whether I'm shooting in portrait or landscape mode. The clear plastic level there basically just contains two spirit levels. One can be, you know, it can be, the thing itself can be fitted to the camera in two different ways as well. But basically the two spirit levels are one for, if you just leave it in the same position and flip the camera over, then the other spirit level becomes the one that tells you whether or not things are still straight. In the next image, number 1408, you can see the level sitting on top of the, you know, sitting in the flash shoe on my Canon EOS 5D digital SLR. The next thing that I wanted to talk about, but not I've not taken a photo of, is the focusing screen EE-D. Canon makes interchangeable focusing screens for many of their film cameras, and for the 1D, 1DS and the 5D digital SLRs. The one I bought gives me a grid inside the viewfinder across the scene, and it's basically like the spirit level. It just gives me another way of, like, a visible indicator of whether or not the camera is level, or my verticals or horizontals are actually vertical or horizontal. Of course, sometimes a scene or subject looks a little bit more natural off level, but when I want things to be straight, this and the spirit level really help. I find as well that this grid is very useful when I'm using the tilt shift lenses. I have a TSC 24mm that you can use to correcting the aspect of buildings and things like that that, you know, would normally become distorted as you look up at them or down at them. And this really helps to sort of get, say, the pillars of a building or the walls of a building straight, because you can literally just line them up with the lines of the grid on the focusing screen. As usual, most of the things come into my workflow for a reason, and the next one I bought after dropping my memory case on a snowy beach in Hokkaido and having had to go back in a taxi with Japanese photographer Yoshiaki Kobayashi to look for it by torchlight. I thought at the time that it would have been much easier to find in the dark if the memory case was a bright colour. So when I saw this yellow case that we can see in image number 1417, I thought that it would be a good addition to my kit. I'm not sure how you pronounce the manufacturer, but these are Gepe or Gep or Geep, GEPE, card safe extreme memory cases. You can see from the grey one on the left that, you know, because you can see the base of the case, that they fit many different types of memory, all in the same case. I'll put a link to the website for many of the things that we'll look at today, including this, so that you can check out this company and see if they have something that suits you too, if you're not so happy with the design of this one. But they have a good range of cases. I saw a slimmer one on there yesterday when I was checking out the website planning for this show. I not only went for this case for the bright colour, but also for the fact that they're incredibly strong and also waterproof. If I was to drop this into the sea, for example, while shooting eagles from a boat, it would not only be waterproof and, you know, it would float, so I could hopefully fish it back out without losing the images, and also saving the contents of the card, because the cards, because they wouldn't get wet. Although I have heard stories of people washing memory cards in clothes and still all of the images being intact, but I wouldn't like to risk it, especially not with salt water. Of course, there's nothing better than being careful so as not to drop the case in the first place. But in the cold and with the excitement of the moment, sometimes things can slip our minds and out of our hands. One piece of advice related to memory cards or memory holders is that when I've filled a card before I've made at least one backup, I'll put the card back into the case with the front label facing down. This way, if I get carried away shooting and come back to change the card again later, I can easily see which cards are full and which I can use. I also usually write my name and email address or phone number, if there's room both, on the back of the cards. I actually found a card case a few years ago full of memory cards, which I handed in at the police station but never found out if the owner got the cards back. If they'd had an email address or a phone number or something on the cards or in the case, I could have contacted the owner myself and then sent the cards back directly. And I'd hope that someone finding mine, if they understood the pain, the obvious pain of losing these things, they would do the same favour for me too. In image number 1418, we can see my filter removers. A few times I've found that I could not remove my filters in the field and either wasted time trying until I could, or had to leave them on until I got home. Fortunately, I've never got one stuck that stops me from getting a shot. But if I was to get, say, a polarizer or an ND filter stuck on the lens, it would increase my shutter speed and possibly I'd lose shots. For this, I've found these light plastic filter removers and drop them into the front pocket of my bag whenever I go out. You basically have to sort of grip the front of the lens with one of the grips and the filter with the other, and then you just turn them in the opposite directions. I've only had to use them twice, but they're quick and easy to use, saving me time and possibly shots. One tip would be, though, that filters usually don't budge when you apply too much pressure in just two or three places. When people get filters stuck on the front of their lenses, what they tend to do is to sort of grip their hands around it. I used to do this. This is why I know. And I can't remember who gave me the tip. But, when you get a filter stuck on the front of your lens, what you generally tend to do is to sort of cup your hand around it with two or three fingers, your thumb and a couple of fingers, and really put a lot of force into it and then try to rotate the filter. And what this does is it causes the filter to be the frame of the filter to become temporarily misshaped, making it oval or some other shape, you know, sticking out more in some places than it would normally. And this actually makes it even more difficult to rotate. So you'll find that holding it evenly with four or maybe all, you know, your thumb as well, all five fingers, and then turning it lightly will often get it off much quicker than putting all of your strength into it. Still, when that doesn't work, and it has with me just twice, but when that doesn't work, these filter removers do come in handy. The next gadget that I'd hate to be without is the Stofen Omni Bounce. And this is a diffuser that we can see in image number 1416. I know that some people aren't that keen on these, and I know that there are other solutions to diffuse flashlight, but I personally find the OmniBounce diffuser to be fine for most of the flash work that I do, and it's nice and light. It really helps to remove the harsh shadows that direct flash can cause. Of course, you can bounce the light to soften it, but I actually bounce light with the diffuser attached, which I also find helps give an even nicer sort of soft light. But when the ceiling is too high or non-existent, you can point your flash straight at the subject with this diffuser attached and still get nice soft light. It doesn't work well in portrait mode, I find. What you'll basically do is, if there's a wall or something too close to your subject, then you'll find that you get a pretty harsh shadow on the opposite side of the subject to, you know, the side that you have the flash on. If you've rotated your camera anti-clockwise so that the flash is on the left, then they'll have a pretty harsh shadow down the right if they've got a wall or something close by to them. In image number 1415, we can see the next item that usually makes its way into my bag when I'm going to be out shooting landscapes, and that's just a plain old compass. Especially when you're out trying to get into position for a sun or moon rise, it's necessary to know where the sun or moon is actually going to peep over the horizon. And although you can usually guess, and you know the light in the sky will be sort of getting gradually more and more in that particular place, with the sunrise at least, not always as obvious with the moon. In fact, I'd say rarely very obvious with the moon. But if you use a tool to find out the exact location that the sun or the moon will rise, a compass will really help to get yourself into that perfect position and set up for the moment. The next thing that I'd say no one can be without is a good big blower, which we can see in image number 1413. This is actually the one that I leave at home usually, and I use for blowing the dust off the front and rear elements of my lenses before trips. But I also have a smaller one that I carry with me on trips that I use for this. The main reason that I use this big one is to blow the dust off my camera's sensor. I find that holding the camera upside down and then blowing the dust from inside the camera, and first of all, and then selecting sensor cleaning from the camera's menu, and again holding the camera upside down and giving the sensor a really good blow, does this, you know, it basically keeps most of the dust away. Sometimes it gets a little bit stubborn, so I take the camera to the service center for a more thorough clean. This is only really every so often, and I think that it's been more than a year since I had my 5D sensor cleaned. I know that there are lots of other ways to keep the sensor clean, but you know, yourself, but I just haven't found that it's been necessary yet. In image number 1414, we can see one of my Wimberley plamps. Plamp stands for plant clamp, I believe, and basically that's what I use it for most of the time. When shooting flowers close up on breezy days, they can sway around quite a lot, making it difficult to get your shot. If you clamp the plamp to your tripod leg and then grab the stalk of the plant, being careful to sort of get it in the grooves there so as not to actually harm the plant in any way, you grab the stalk and then, you know, basically position it so that it doesn't tug it in either way. You do that, if you can see the photograph, it's like clothes pegs. It's sort of the blue plastic part of the plamp in my photograph, though I realize that they have different colors available. Then basically what this does is it stops the plant from swaying around while you shoot it. You can, of course, hold other things with the plamp. I actually carry two around with me when I'm out shooting flowers or insects on flowers. So I can use one to hold the plant itself if it's breezy, and another one to hold, say, a reflector in position or a piece of semi-transparent white plastic over the subject to cut out some of the light to either increase the level of contrast between the flower and its surroundings or to sort of level it out, making it more even. I'm sure that there are lots of other ways to use the plant, but these are just a few of the ways that I use mine. Let's move on to image number 1412, in which we can see a really right stuff focusing rail. I mentioned both the plamp and this in one of my macro episodes, but just to recap, as I'd really not like to be without either of these tools. When shooting macro at life size or higher magnification, to get a little bit closer or further away, or even sort of moving the camera left or right slightly, it can be a real pain to actually start moving your camera around on the tripod itself. With focusing rails, you can sort of move the camera backwards and forwards by rotating the screws at the front or the back, or left and right movement is obtained by sort of slackening the quick release latch thing there, and you slide the top rail around and then you just sort of retighten the quick release. More importantly, I'd say, is that the forward and backward movement is so precise that it helps you to actually fine-tune focusing, especially when using lenses like the 65mm that has a 1 to 5 times magnification that basically has no focusing mechanism. If you want more details on this lens and using the focusing rail as well, please do listen to episode 43 if you've not picked up on that one already, in which I talked about shooting at life size and larger. I'll put a link to the Really Right Stuff website page where you can see the focusing rails into the show notes as well. If you want to look, just click on the B150-B package link to the right of the page, and this way you can see this particular model. This allows you to use the rails with lenses, use these particular rails with lenses that have the tripod ring mounts. If you use the rail by actually mounting the camera directly rather than the lens, then you wouldn't need this the top rail that goes horizontally across and that allows me to move the camera left and right. So finally, one of the newest additions to my kits is a walk stool. That we can see, we're going to look at the next three photos are of the walk stool. And the first one is image number 1411. And there we can see my walk stool in its fully wrapped up state. Having tried a few for height, I decided on the walk stool basic 50 centimeters or 20 inch model. This is actually the second to shortest of the models available right now. There are a fair few taller ones as well, but as you might imagine, the taller they get, the heavier they get. The one that I have is 650 grams, or 23 ounces. The other important thing is that I'm not carrying this thing around with me to give me something to sit down and eat lunch on. It's basically to allow me to get down low for macro and other low-level work without starting to get all uncomfortable while, you know, shooting in that position for a long time. The 50-centimeter stool I found was a perfect sort of height for medium-height shooting. And the wonder of this stool is that, as we can see in image number 1410, you can actually just undo the strap and open the stool up and use it without extending the legs for an even lower support of 30 centimeters or 12 inches. If you're not familiar with these stools, you might be thinking right now that they may not support your weight. If, like me, you're carrying just a pound or two of excess baggage, but unless you're a sumo wrestler, and you know the walk stool website does use this as an example, but unless you're a sumo wrestler in his prime, even these smaller walk stools should be fine. The one I use supports up to 150 kilograms or 330 pounds, so I think I can have a few more pints of Guinness yet before having to worry about this. In the last of the three images, number 1409, we can see the walk stool fully extended. Although I would not suggest sitting on the standard model for a whole day, they're really, you know, definitely great for an hour or so while waiting for some action to unfurl, or while shooting some macro shots. They are even remarkably comfortable when using for a reasonable length of time without the legs extended, as I just mentioned, you know, in the last shot. If you really want a comfortable sit, though, as opposed to the basic model, they also do a comfort model, which has a larger sitting area. This would probably have been better for me when you consider the size of my Jaxi, but as the comfort increases, so does the weight, so I decided to give the weight preference over comfort. As it is, I can just attach this walk stool to the back of my Rucksack-style camera bag and forget about it until I need it. So that's almost it. I haven't talked about my Y-Bal today, which is a type of grey card that you shoot to either set your custom white balance while shooting or to set the white balance later in post-processing. I'd like to say that I'm not going to cover this today because I've covered it in other podcasts, but if I admit to myself and to you, the real reason is because I just forgot to take a photo of it yesterday. So I'd better just say that this still is one item that I use pretty regularly, especially when the light is a little bit challenging. I will add a link to the Y-Bal website to the show notes in case you're interested and you don't already know about this or own one, or want one, actually. So there are a few other things that I've probably forgotten to mention. And as usual, if you have something that you just can't live without, please do come by the forum at martinbaileyphotography.com and let us know about it. There is actually one other item that I'm seriously thinking about adding to my kit right now, and some of you will probably be laughing when you hear this, but it's a pair of knee pads. Now, I know that I'm going to look really silly walking around parks with knee pads on, and I don't even own a skateboard, but I'll probably end up putting them on only when necessary. But when you weigh as much as I do, and I'm not sure, I mean, about other people, but When kneeling down on gravel or uneven surfaces, pretty soon it becomes a painful deal. And Ginichi, a photography store in Ginza here in Tokyo, has started to stock a pair of quick-release knee pads that I have my eye on, and I'll probably be picking some up soon. I gave up trying to look cool while out photographing a long while ago, and would much prefer to get a few extra low-angle shots, rather than, I've been looking cool for a long time anyway, but I don't think I'm missing shots because I usually put up with the pain, but then I'm sort of grimacing with pain as I stand up a little sooner than I would if my knees weren't sort of being mashed up by the uneven surface. Just a couple of pieces of housekeeping before we finish today. Firstly, remember that the Simplicity assignment is now closed and I've turned on the voting system. Please do come by to the mbpgalleries.com website and take a look at the album. There's a link halfway down, a thumbnail, which is a link halfway down the top page. And take a moment to register if you're not already a member and vote for your favourite image. There are some really amazing shots in there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing, again, I said this last week, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys choose. Thanks again for all of those that took part. I've also noticed while looking through the images that some of the people that have uploaded images have not registered on the martinbaileyphotography.com website. If you're going to sort of, take part, then please do add or, create an account with the same name and email address and password on the martinbaileyphotography.com website so that when I do eventually get around to linking these two sites, you won't lose your account. Voting, by the way, will continue until the end of Sunday, the 29th of April, and that will be the time when we'll find out who the winner of the original print for this particular assignment, an original print of your choice from my gallery. But more importantly, this will be the one that will find out who will scoop the annual prize based on the accumulated votes for the whole year, and which, the prize itself is going to be the amazing Lowepro Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag. So one other thing is, a few weeks ago I requested people to mail me if you know of any good lens review or lens comparison sites. Thanks very much to all of those that have posted links on the forum and also that have mailed me. But if you have time, if you're thinking of mailing me, then if you do have time before writing the email and shooting it off to me, please do sort of go over and check the forum, the podcast forum at my website, and just check if the link's not there. I've received quite a few mail from people with the same link, that then it's already on the website quite a few times. So. Obviously I'll check. If you don't have time and you send it me, I'll check beforehand anyway. But if it's a toss-up between sending the mail and not sending it, and please ignore what I've just said and send it anyway. But if you do have time, check it out before you make the send me the email, and you might save yourself a little bit of time writing the mail and me a little bit of time checking as well. So apart from that, whatever you're doing this week, have a great time doing it, and I'll speak to you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.